www.ms.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Tevas, Pierre Lafon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we're here today with Dr. Joe White, former professor and department chair of the philosophy department at Santa Barbara City College. Good afternoon, Joe.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
You know, one of the things that's been in the press over the last couple of years is trying to determine whether a college education is worth all of the money and all of the debt that these kids sustain. And there's been a lot of talk about looking at a college diploma relative to how much money you could earn. And as a result, the humanities have been have become less attractive to many students, and your whole life has been teaching philosophy. How would you advise somebody who was interested in majoring in philosophy or studying philosophy or any of the humanities for that matter when it confronted with this push to find a way of becoming a bond trader?
Well, it's very well put in our practical culture here and looking for how to maximize your income. I think just within the general context of trying to maximize your income, once one's wealth goes up, one realizes that money's value is primarily extrinsic. You want to get something out of it. I think I heard you remark a little while ago that while you were in New York, you went to see Hello, Dolly. I wonder what the value of that is. Why would someone go to a Broadway play? Why would they put on Broadway plays? Why is there a Broadway? You know, those sorts of values, those things that have intrinsic values, what our money gets us to. And a large part of the humanities is to provide us with intrinsic values. So we have things like the arts, and we understand ourselves and our place in history. A lot of times a narrow focus on money leaves you impoverished.
Well, you're going to be very proud of me because when I got there, I was offered online 2.5 times the ticket cost, the face of value, and I was tempted. But then I realized life's too short, and I did not take the money. So there was actually a real-life philosophical confrontation I had in front of the theater.
Well, and you'll find that, you know, once people acquire a certain level of wealth, they then seek to do those things that have the intrinsic value for them. They collect art. They go to plays. They go to museums. They support museums. You know, those are the things that the humanities are all about. And if you spend too much time making money, your own aesthetic values and your own understanding of history is impoverished, and you cannot appreciate museums and music and art as deeply as you might if you'd had a bit more humanities in your life.
Which leads us to a philosophical question, which is, what's happiness? Because one of the things that I find when I taught, students weren't asking themselves is, A, do I look at happiness as a goal, which they didn't, and then when you ask them to define happiness, they were sort of lost.
I would encourage all of your students to take a philosophy class. And in a philosophy class, interestingly, in the history of the discussion, what you'll find is when you talk about happiness in a robust philosophical context, you find that children and animals cannot attain that. It's only a certain type of creature that can be happy. And happiness shouldn't necessarily be a goal. It should be a condition of your life once you have become what philosophers refer to as a person. And in that, you realize that the study of philosophy varies. Ones like, for example, Aristotle. Aristotle, over 2,000 years ago, gave you a formula for living well and experiencing happiness, or what the Greeks called eudaimonia, because oftentimes people confuse happiness with joy. Joy is an emotion. It's fleeting. It's not a condition of our life. If you have a good life, a happy life, you will experience grief. You'll experience sadness. You'll experience frustration and fatigue. All of these things are ingredients in the good life. It's just you have to set yourself up. Basically, the way it's come down to us, let's just take the case of Aristotle. So you're playing a consistent set of roles wholeheartedly.
But is it important to have happiness as a goal, or if you do everything correctly, will it come to you?
Well, for me, I'm experiencing it right now.
Well, you're retired. That's why I joined the happiness crowd. I've been retired for 20 years.
Well, I'll tell you one of my vivid moments of discovering where I was when I was an undergraduate and I took my first philosophy class. I had a female professor in my first class who was so dynamic, so smart, so sharp that I had never met a human being like that. And at the time, I was a psychology major planning to go to medical school and be a psychiatrist. And I was going well in my studies, and I took this philosophy class, and I thought, my, there's a whole set of questions and issues that are being presupposed by most of the sciences and most of the humanities, and that was in the area of philosophy. And as I went through that semester, it struck me one time very vividly, I thought, what a wonderful life I could have if I was a philosophy professor. At that time, I wasn't changing my major, but I thought a life of a philosophy professor. And then I started thinking, I thought, boy, if I had a nice home, wife, children, a dog, and a big kitchen, maybe a big wooden kitchen with a big table where I had interesting friends who were artists and poets and writers, that would be a good life. I would be happy. And I got busy in life, but I ended up majoring in philosophy and psychology, and that's another story. But in my mid-40s, a fellow colleague of mine, academician, who was down from Canada, was visiting with me at our home. And we were sitting there, and he said, you know, did you think we'd have kids and mortgages, and we'd be here right now, and we were back in graduate school? And I said, you know, there's so much going on. My kid's doing this. And I stopped, and I looked around, and I was in this beautiful kitchen. I have a lovely wife. There went my dog. There go the kids. And I was a philosophy professor. I got exactly what I wished for. And sometimes I think it's right with us, but we get mesmerized, or we chase things like money, which has no intrinsic value, and we miss what's going on in this moment when we're truly living a happy life. We miss it.
Well, this is surprising because I thought to be a philosopher, you had to wear a sheet and live in a cave. Is that not true? You can live in a nice house with a kitchen?
Old school.
Oh, that's the
old school, Neil.
Okay.
And you're probably thinking of Diogenes.
Right. Well, you know, they all sound the same.
Well, we can get you over that.
Well, speaking of philosophy, who's your favorite philosopher?
Can I ask you, who's your favorite child?
Yes.
You have a favorite child? Go ahead. You can name that child in public now.
Okay, let me rephrase the question. Who would you recommend someone who is interested in philosophy study at the beginning of their journey?
Let me say the ones who've influenced me the most, and then we can talk in any detail. I would start with Socrates. I'd probably jump up then to Descartes, Hume, Kant, 20th century. Russell, Wittgenstein, Quine, and finally Rawls for me.
My favorite is Hobbes because, exemplified the insight to know that people, in my view, are just sort of mean-spirited and selfish. And I only have to look at the political debate today taking place and to realize how prescient he was.
He does attract cynics.
Yes, he does. And from New York, I was already predisposed to think that he had some great insight.
You may have found your soulmate. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm not like that.
Oh.
Excuse me.
Oh, sorry.
Excuse me. I'm looking for a nice cave.
You noticed I did not mention Hobbes.
Yes. Well.
In that regard, I'm more Lockean.
Yeah. Well, yes. And by the way, this conversation, talk about talking at the fringe of your knowledge. exactly. What Thoreau said, which was that the problem with democracy, or maybe it was de Tocqueville who said the problem with democracy is people aren't going to be educated and they're going to take over and not be able to really provide the kind of freedom people thought they'd get.
Well, being at the edge of knowledge, that's why I gave you a copy of my textbook, Adventures on the Frontier of Knowledge.
Yeah, but you gave me
philosophy will get you there quickly.
Excuse me, you gave me the textbook 5 minutes ago, so you did
it's
not.
It's not that
you,
thick.
Well, I understand that, but you have the advantage. I'm sure you've read the book. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. You're listening to Aha Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and I'm going to read the textbook during the break, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear from humble beginnings in 1973. Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. We're here with Dr. Joe White, who was the department chair in philosophy at Santa Barbara City College. And he is recently retired, and therefore he's able to spend the afternoon with us. You would have a class at this point, wouldn't you?
During the regular semester, yes, I'd probably be in class.
Yeah. So tell us, are you you don't sound like me. I take it you're not from New York.
No, I'm from the Midwest.
The Midwest.
Of the United States.
And how did you get out? How did you get out here?
Car.
Thank you. And you've been listening to.
I could fill that in. I mean, I
was
just,
it edu- was it your
I'm just
schooling?
Having fun.
Was it your schooling or?
Yes, I came from Canada originally. I went from the Midwest to Canada to go to graduate school, and my advisor in Canada, a fellow by the name of Kai Nielsen, had a student who is in the UCSB Department of Philosophy, and he recommended that I come down here as I was ready to do more philosophy. And so I came down here, and while a graduate student at UCSB, a fellow who is teaching logic at Santa Barbara City College, was ill with cancer and had to stop teaching during the semester, and they posted a note at UCSB, and I thought, well, this looks interesting. And I walked into my first class at UCSB, I think it was the fall of 19—at SBCC, in the fall of 1978 to pick up a logic class, and it was an experience. It touched me to see all those kids.
But just go back. What got you interested in philosophy in the first place?
As I mentioned a moment ago, as a psychology major, I was studying and hoping to go to medical school, studying biology and a lot of psychology and take my science classes. And it was in that first philosophy class that questions came up, not what do you know, but what is knowledge? Because there's a gap between people having knowledge and people having beliefs. And what I was dealing with in most of my classes was what was basically accepted as knowledge and getting on, what's the truth and getting on, and let's talk about the mind, let's talk about the emotions. But no one was asking, well, what is the mind? And does the mind exist separate from the brain? And these sorts of questions were coming up in philosophy, and I just realized that most of the disciplines rest on philosophical presuppositions, and I felt that my education and my understanding as a whole was incomplete without exploring more of philosophy.
Well, this has been in the news every day because there is this gulf between what half the country believes and half the country thinks. And can you explain what, or not explain it? It's inexplicable. But how do we, as a country, begin to deal with facts and understand what a fact is?
In the world, if you're referring to the world of politics in particular, political discourse has two really very significant components, and it's kind of surprising how we differ over both areas. One component is how we understand the facts. And this is, I think, one of the first times it's been so systematically apparent that we just don't agree on the facts. And we even have words like alternative facts, or we have some people coming out saying things like, well, we really don't need evidence. And that's so peculiar. On the other hand, the big area, and one of the reasons for democracy, is that we have these values. And we know that in democratic countries, intelligent, well-informed people will disagree over the values. So democracy is an attempt to find a consensus amongst all of that accepted difference. But the assumption in the background has been that we will agree on the facts. But right now we're not agreeing on the facts. Part of that is, I think today, is that our country and the world is experiencing such radical change. And you see in the world of philosophy, when you talk about moral philosophy, that there are people in the world who are more receiving or accepting of change and those that aren't. And it plays itself out politically between progressives and conservatives, conservative characters. You know, just that natural disposition in your character is they tend to be somewhat averse to change. Well, up until, you know, this last century, societies changed very slowly. But suddenly, for example, in this country, I mean, when you look at the things that are going on with gay marriage and gay and lesbian lives and marijuana legislation, I mean, there's so much change that's going on that we're experiencing in part that natural disposition of conservatism to dig in. And it's dug in very deeply at this point. And in order to do that and maintain it, sometimes the facts get butchered.
Okay, so let's push facts away for a second. And let's look at a philosophy of life. I look at the healthcare bill, and I believe that people as a society should not let another 24 million people, or for that matter, 70 million people not have the same health care as me. I think that's a fundamental right of human beings. Clearly, a good deal of the population doesn't believe that. So that's a view of humanity that goes beyond facts as far as I'm concerned. So yes, I am prejudiced based upon how my parents brought me up, but I came to view my role as a citizen to include at least basic care for my fellow citizens. But based upon what you hear people talk about, which is I want to save taxes, I want to save money on taxes, and if some people fall by the wayside, it's only because they didn't work hard enough. Seems to me that that's a real difference, not so much in facts, but in the way you frame what it's like, what it is to be a human being.
Well, that's quite a lot you just said right there. For example, let's just take the fact that you stated where some people believe that, you know, you need to work harder so you don't fall by the wayside. Well, some people are working as hard as they can and they still fall. So that's a factual error to think that people are suffering simply because they failed to work hard enough. But when it comes to saying what people ought to receive, how should we distribute health care, that's a value judgment. And it's important they have to be informed by the facts. But it is something over which we realize we will disagree with people who say, well, we should be saving this in taxes and we should be doing this in terms of health care. So let's have the debate. What's disturbing the present environment is that our present health care proposal out of the Senate, I believe, was put together by a small group of white guys in the Republican Party. And there is no Democrat involved or woman involved. That's not a very good process. And I think our institutions are holding at this point, saying that's not a very good process. Democracy cannot be healthy and run by small elite groups like this. We need open discussion, and we have to realize, and I think in this environment, one thing we've failed to realize, which is essential to the democratic process, is that ultimately democracy is for losers. That is, it's easy to win. But in a democracy, you've got to expect that you will lose at times, and you've got to accept that loss. But if that loss happens in open and fair debate, then we'd be willing to accept it. And that's not the environment we're in right now, because we don't have a president in a win-win situation. He's in a win-lose situation.
But, you know, we're here in the People's Republic of Santa Barbara, so maybe we're a little bit skewed. But, you know, it's not simply that the politicians have their view, is that the Republicans now still have a 40% approval rating, which means that if you look at the secrecy behind this bill, and we can criticize the bill, we can criticize if they had a 10% approval rating, we could say democracy has to, you know, really take over and give people the sense that we care about them. But the fact is, it's half and half now. They're even today, a good, very substantial part of this country believes that what is going on is all right. And that, to me, is one of the most, you know, stressful things, because I don't understand it.
I think you and I would have to come to some consensus on those facts. Last I heard, the president was at 36%, and the last I had, he was losing more and more Senate Republican senators supporting his bill. So, you know, as far as I know, that bill was somewhat dead.
Forget
at
the
this
bill.
Point.
Even if it's 36, 36 is over 100 million people still are agreeing in the basic philosophy that as long as my taxes go down, I'm not going to worry about the fact that there's somebody that may die in front of a hospital. And by the way, that's literally true.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't understand how people can live with themselves. And, you know, even in this city, I know people that have a feeling that that's that they made it on their own. So therefore, everybody should do it themselves.
Well, those could be the Hobbesians amongst us.
Yes.
And we will find that amongst the Hobbesians, you know, there's still Wheelockians out here as well.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers Brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers Brand Showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands, while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coramore Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7, Monday through Saturday, and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers. In the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. We're here with Dr. Joe White, the former head of the philosophy department at Santa Barbara City College, and one of the leaders, if not the leader, of 2020, A Year Without War.
Yes.
So I'm very excited that 2020 will be a year without war. Thank you.
Yeah, you're more than welcome.
So
but let us all hold our breath.
So tell us about that initiative. I know it's been going on for quite a while.
6 years. And it started at Santa Barbara City College with a group of students and I. And the basic idea at that time, and it has evolved, is that we would try to build a global community, starting with the millennials, try to get 500 million of them. This was in 2011 as the Arab Spring was unfolding, and they were tweeting and Facebooking all over the place, and Tunisia was changing, and Egypt was changing, and Libya was falling, and Syria was rocking, and the Arab Emirates, they were all worried in the Middle East with this Arab Spring. So we thought we could get together, build a website, and attract maybe 10% of the world's population, 800 million people, and secure 1 year without war through our online community. So the students stepped up, built a website, and we started watching the numbers climb from a few hundred to a few thousand to 10,000, and we got partnerships, and it was going quite good, and we realized, what exactly is the link? How do we do this? So we settled on, as we thought about this, we settled on trying to secure a 1 year global truce at the United Nations. That's our primary focus now. And at the outset, there was an initial reaction from people, a lot of adults, mostly white guys, but not so much females and college students, that the United Nations is an ineffectual institution. It wouldn't be able to do anything. Why waste your time going there? But as we came to realize that with the 193 nations in the UN, if we could get them to sign a 1 year global truce, that would be quite an accomplishment for all of us. Now, in the meantime, we discovered that about every 2 years since approximately 1998, they signed a 1 month global truce for the International Olympic Games. So the 2020 Olympics are in Tokyo. So our request has turned into an 11-month extension on that 1 month anticipated Olympic truce. So the question is, will there be a year without war in 2020? Probably not. But what this marks is a first public formal step on the part of the world's nations at this time to take a specific action to declare that for 1 year we will not resort to war. Will they hold to it? I don't know. But it will be the first step on what we hope will probably be a centuries-long abolition movement. So as with American slavery, when it started really with William Garrison, I think it was in the early 1830s, William Lloyd Garrison, it's a slow process, but it's got to start specifically someplace. And certainly the abolition of slavery in the United States didn't end racism, but the abolition of war is going to be essential to humanity as we've poisoned our planet and now spend trillions of dollars killing each other. We just don't want us to be the dead-end species in the next generation or two.
Of course, one of the more difficult elements you're dealing with now is that some of the actors are not nation states. And so if you are able to achieve your goal, you still have, you know, ISIS and Al-Qaeda in a position to create military issues that go beyond what a country is willing to do. So that makes it much more difficult.
It makes it very difficult. But again, what we've tried to do with this and the value that we've added to this conversation is to make it as specific and simple and public as possible. And I know for myself, if I'm fortunate enough to sit in the United Nations and hear a majority of nations say, yes, we formally and publicly will not do this. And we're basically there with most of the nations of the world right now. We just need this public formal statement so it can be renewed year after year. What ISIS does, what Al-Qaeda does, what Al-Shabaab does, you know, those are different situations, and we can't take it all on. Some of our headwind is that people are either cynical or skeptical about this. And I think it's because they've dealt so often with these big programs that are just open-ended. You know, P peace movements. We're not a peace movement. We're nonpartisan. We're not religious. We're not pacifist. We're not anti-military. We just want this one-year big public global truce. So we're not here to end war. We're not here to raise global consciousness. We're a simple group.
And where is it now? How many people do you have on your...
Roughly between our mailing list, our different social media, we hang in there at around 40,000 people with a lot of partners, and we're on multiple social media. People can find us on Facebook at A Year Without War. We have a website, A Year Without War. We're on Instagram and Twitter. They can follow us there.
And do you raise money for this, or is this all being done... As a volunteer effort?
Most of the students who've been working have worked as volunteers, and it's been mostly student. But at this time, I've traveled to South America. I've been to Asia, to Vietnam and Cambodia as part of this program, across North America and in Europe. We've gone through what was really our testing phase and our building phase. And so now we really need the help, anybody out there listening right now, of supporting this because it needs to take its next big global jump. We've made contacts all over. We've asked people, for example, just put us in your donation line. Donate $20.20 every month. If, you know, in some sense, as we've talked the other day, we're kind of like Columbus looking for our Ferdinand and Isabella. We've done our charting. We've got our ships. We've got our provisions. As a matter of fact, just here in Santa Barbara, if just 10 people, and it's certainly they're here in Santa Barbara, each one of them gave us $5,000, that would take us a year out, and we would be a substantial global presence if we could just get that donation. And we are our own 501c3, and you can easily donate at our website. We just need to find the visionary. And in my experience of fundraising here, which is what we've been doing for the last few years, it's interesting. Most of the people that I've met locally in terms of trying to fundraise, I think that if I went to these people and asked, and told them, I said, you know, at Mount Rushmore, Lincoln's nose is falling off. It's going to cost me $150,000 to put that nose on. These people would step up. I'd raise $150,000 in no time. But if I went to this same group of people and said, you know what I need here is I need some funding to go carve some faces on the side of a mountain in South Dakota, they'd all laugh at me. You know, nobody's going to go to South Dakota and see that. Who wants to see presidential faces? So what we are looking for at this point are true visionaries. We're not looking for the conservative who wants to, you know, already support an established school or hospital or something. We're looking for the visionaries who want to tip history and see that this world could be a better place. And we have a very tangible, simple first step.
And if you look at history, though, and look at the way philosophers explained the fact that we've had war consistently, and war even being probably for Adam and Eve and his cousin Joe, were probably fighting about, you know, who got the bigger piece of dead uncooked meat. Is it part of human nature to have war?
Well, there are interesting things about history that you bring this up. Year without war is not the same as a year without earthquakes. If you would have said 100 years ago, let's have a year without smallpox. Well, smallpox has been with us for millions of years, but there's no smallpox on the earth right now. We're hoping to work with Rotary, and Rotary has almost eliminated polio at this point. So these sorts of things that have been with us have changed. Now, so that's part of nature that we change. On the other hand, with human beings, we've ended slavery. Women are being more enfranchised. I mean, you just look at what our history has been. We don't duel anymore when we get upset with each other. War is chosen by collectives, and it's presently a minority that's pushing all of this. The majority of people do not want this, and now we've gotten to a point in our own history where we're a dead-end species. If we don't stop killing each other and creating these weapons of mass destruction while we poison our planet, this is a critical period, and I, at 2020, need the adults to step in now. The kids, the students, have been working on this really hard while holding down their two or three jobs. I wish I could give them internships.
What's the name of the website that you can donate on?
A Year Without War, AYWW. There's a big donate button there and lots of blogs to read.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ah New brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. We are here today with Dr. Joe White, the former department chair of the philosophy department of Santa Barbara City College, and we're talking about 2020, A Year Without War. And, you know, this is AHA Presents About Education, and AHA basically is helping teens. How can teens get involved?
Well, we've recently applied for a grant from the Irvine Foundation to build a network amongst California's high school students, college students, and university students to have clubs on campuses advocating for 2020, A Year Without War, and to spread the word out. At this point, any high school student who hears this can contact Maya, M-A-Y-A, at AYWW.org, and we will get a packet to you, a booklet on how to form a club and how to establish a presence for 2020, A Year Without War, on your campus. At this point, you know, the students are so receptive of this. We've had receptivity at Dos Pueblos, at San Marcos, at Santa Barbara High School. It's time now for us. But again, when we put these booklets together, you know, somebody's got to pay for all of this. And we pay, you know, this is where we need our donations. This is where we need our support. And
what about the argument that war is good for the economy? They talk about World War II was the major reason why we not only were able to get out of the Depression, but became a major power, economic power. Is war good?
Well, in some narrow way. I mean, we just experienced the Great Recession, and it's been compared to being nearly as bad as the Great Depression. But thanks to newer policies, we didn't quite sink as low, but we also avoided a world war and nearly 60 million dead. I think, again, most human beings, which is why we created this website where you can come and join us in our social network, most human beings believe that if it's going to take the death of 60 million people to get out of a depression, an economic depression, that's a very odd calculation to make. does war benefit people? It benefits a small group. But again, if you go, you can go online to a number of websites that have a cost of war calculator. You see that given the economic multiplier, when you spend money on schools or hospitals, the economic effect compared to building a tank and putting it on a tarmac someplace is far more in the social side of things. War is really a last resort. Somebody gets paid, that's true. And given President Eisenhower's worry about the military-industrial complex and how far it has grown now into our society, it's going to take probably a century to untangle that. But it's not economically beneficial in the bigger picture.
And the other side of that is the peace dividend. There are economic benefits for peace. And to the extent that the efforts of great scientists, great minds go into creating things that will produce goods and services as opposed to producing napalm, then you may actually increase your GDP.
Well, and you may recall from the early 1990s, after the Soviet Union fell, Margaret Thatcher and President H.W. Bush had quite a lively discussion about their anticipated peace dividend and what this would mean for the world, given the fact that now the Cold War was ending. But it just wasn't perpetuated, just didn't keep going, which is one of the for us, this new technology, the global internet, for us is the first time that humanity's had the opportunity to collectively voice their concerns about this. We've never had this opportunity before. And so here in Santa Barbara, we built our first website. We now have a robust satellite community in Italy, A Year Without War, Italia. We're hoping to have one in Sweden. We're hoping these things continue to grow over the summer and to give humanity the opportunity to say, you know, we've got to stop this. You know, I myself find this disgusting, what people like ISIS do. We see daily what war and combat does. It's just destructive. In our at our website, we have, and the brochure I gave you, we have these before, during, and after pictures. And the one we put in our brochure is about Dresden. You see this old German city. Then we firebomb it. Then we've got to go back and rebuild it. Our goal is, let's just skip the middle. Mm-hmm. Those 4 years we could have skipped and still had all of our resources.
Do you think Plato and Socrates and the rest of the gang ever had a discussion like this?
Yes. But they were much more warrior cultures. I think now what we've realized is that we live on a planet which metaphorically is small. There are 7 billion of us. And we can't simply go someplace, salt the earth, as the Romans did in Carthage, and then go back home. You know, what some people fail to understand with nuclear weapons, and I'm not sure where North Korea is or where our president is with this, but when you drop a, you know, should someone in Iran nuke Israel, if I'm not mistaken, the jet stream flows back toward Iran. So you're not going to put all that radiation in the sky over Jerusalem and you not get poisoned as well. Yeah. We're now in an era of weapons of mass destruction. And we've got groups that are ideological dead enders, apocalyptic groups. And we hear the talk that, you know, sometimes the next life is the life we're looking for so we can end all of this. That's the sort of talk that we've got to stop. And we've got to stop it, first of all, at a national level, which is feasible, I think.
I don't want to ruin your afternoon, but the jet stream doesn't stop in Tehran. It just keeps going.
That's right.
And maybe they'll be safer for about 18 hours, but then it's going to come to beautiful, sunny Santa Barbara.
That's why I mentioned our president.
Yes. Yeah. So when you taught at City College, you taught a whole, obviously, over the years, many subjects.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite subject?
Intro.
Intro, because everyone is open-minded and
they're so fresh.
They're so fresh.
Yes, they come and they oftentimes think it's going to be a kind of simply a history class or it's going to be a psychology class. They're just not sure. And when they first encounter a discipline like epistemology, where they realize that human beings have been concerned with that distinction between believing something and knowing something and what the missing components might be to bridge that gap between believing and knowing, they become fascinated when they realize that human beings, very smart, informed human beings, have disagreed over whether or not minds, let's say, are physical things or non-physical things. And philosophers might sometimes claim that, you know, you're more likely to encounter a unicorn in this life than you are a ghost, because there are no ghosts. Ghosts simply do not exist. And they become intrigued, and they want to start sorting things out. I think one thing, too, in an intro class is that philosophy is sometimes to our belief system what nutrition studies are to our diets. We all grow up with a diet in our home, and we eat. And then you get a little older, and you start to realize that maybe my diet isn't so healthy in some regards. And philosophy takes that, what was implicit and not really reflected upon and thought about, and said, maybe my belief system isn't all that healthy. Maybe things have actually changed. And in philosophy, there's an adage that one century's philosophy is the next century's common sense. And we see this unfolding, particularly politically, as we talked mm-hmm. earlier about Hobbes or John Locke, and we see it play out in Thomas Jefferson. But Lincoln's view of America is very different from Jefferson's view of America in terms of where rights come from and what we stand for. And that marked a difference between Locke and Immanuel Kant.
And by the way, Lincoln and Trump are both Republicans. So one can make a case that there was a change.
I tell you what brought a tear to my eye 3 weeks ago was when our president said, why was there a civil war? You know, couldn't somebody have struck a deal? And there was Lincoln, I believe, the first Republican president who gave us the Gettysburg Address, where the president would have known if he had read that. And I hope he's read the Gettysburg Address, and I hope he's heard of the Gettysburg Address.
Mm-hmm. The thing I enjoyed about teaching the most when I was teaching was the difference between the first day and the last day for those that remained. Is that something that you really were? Is that one of the reasons you taught, that there's this sort of enlightenment that takes place somewhere down the road?
What happens in philosophy, if it really takes hold, is I think people find themselves, to borrow a phrase from Immanuel Kant, they are woken from their dogmatic slumber. And philosophy is a meta-activity. It's where you're thinking about thinking. You're trying to understand how it is that your world was put together. And going back to the analogy with nutrition studies, yeah. You know, most of us grow up in families and you eat a certain way. Yeah. Then you get to a certain level of maturity, or you get out in the world and you meet other people and you realize not everybody eats this way.
But, you know, in nutrition, it always changes. They always change the rules. Sugar's good, sugar's no good. Salt's good, salt's not. But philosophy is pretty stable.
it is stable. You know, and if we have time, maybe we can talk about this interesting discovery or argument on the part of John Rawls in the late 20th century about political philosophy, that traditionally most have looked at political philosophy as the good being prior to the right. But as he says, in this modern world, with the very brutal fact of pluralism, human beings must reconceptualize their politics if they're going to find stability, and the right must be prior to the good. And so we see this battling itself out right now.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Deckers Brands, the parent company of global lifestyle footwear brands UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Anu, invite you to experience their new brand showcase firsthand in Goleta. Discover new product, try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand, and get a peek into the company's headquarters. The brand showcase is open for business Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta. See you out there.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. We're here with Dr. Joe White, the former department chair of philosophy at Santa Barbara City College, and the power behind 2020, A Year Without War. And right before the break, we were talking about John Rawls.
John Rawls, 20th century philosopher, one of the most prominent political philosophers, and I'm going to be starting an activity here in Santa Barbara called the Socrates Cafe that we will talk in more detail about these, and we'll send out some information.
Will Socrates be there? Is it
just in spirit?
Just in spirit, okay.
The questioning side. But I think one of the important things for people to who are interested in Rawls and want to read some stuff, there's an abundance of information out there about John Rawls, and that is his argument that traditionally we have placed the good prior to the right. And what that means, particularly in our Western world, let's take it up through the Middle Ages, was that in the medieval period, the Christian church dominated Western culture. And so to be a good Christian, people knew what they should be doing, what was the right thing to do. But you started with being a good Christian, let's say, and then there was the right thing to do. Rawls argues now in the 20th century, we've got to deal with the brutal fact of plurality, that people just fundamentally disagree about these kinds of comprehensive doctrines, which Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, libertarianism, what these are, and that bleeds down into certain philosophical views as well. And so the recognition that very bright, well-informed people disagree over these fundamental views about the good life, and for what he calls the burdens of judgment, we need to put the right prior to the good. And we need to find stability in this diversity, not stability by trying to homogenize the culture and make everybody like us, which has been our tradition and which we saw start to break down in the medieval period with the creation of the Inquisition. The Inquisition became a keeper of the homogenous society that they thought was Christianity. But we just can't go there, or we will end up in endless war and conflict. So if we could conceptualize the right being prior to the good, a lot of this talk about religious groups and funding for health insurance would go away, these sorts of debates in America, because we're still, so many of us are still stuck with the good being prior to the right.
But isn't it interesting how religious this country is versus other advanced Western countries? It's really sort of surprising.
We are conservative, in that way.
So if he were around today, what would he be doing as a volunteer for A Year Without War?
Rawls?
Yeah.
I'd hope he'd be our spokesperson. And actually, if we had a chance to talk about his work, was the inspiration for 2020, A Year Without War. And I just hope all the philosophers out there that might be listening to this, if they want to get involved with 2020, A Year Without War, you could certainly blog for us. And anyone else, as I said before, our goal is to take some of these students out of the coffee shops and the hotels and the retail places and to give them a stipend to work as interns for us. And as we talked earlier, our outreach to the high schools and colleges and maintaining an office, we need your support. And all support is welcome. The stability would come with a $20, 20-cent monthly donation. But if there are those 10 people out there in Santa Barbara who could each donate $5,000, we would take one big step forward for an entire year and push this into the United Nations. And I should just mention, if you come to our website, you can see that we're recently in Bogota, Colombia for the World Summit of Nobel Peace Laureates, and we've been invited to the United Nations for the last 2 years to make presentations, but we need your support.
And it's very interesting that you were in Colombia when they announced today that they finally completely disarmed the rebels that were in part of a 50-year war.
50-year civil war, and President Santos of Colombia received the Nobel Peace Prize last year, and he has a packet of 2020 A Year Without War information. So if you know President Santos, contact him.
Thank you so much, Joe White. It's always fascinating to talk to you. thank you for being our guest. Good luck with A Year Without War. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education. We'll be right back next week.
It's 3